Fisher Body Historical Team Interview with Mr. Eldridge Cook, otherwise known as Cookie. The date is Tuesday, January 10th. We're in the UAW Local 602 Frank Dreyer Greenhouse. My name is Marilyn Coulter, and the other team members are?
Earl Nicholson,
Gary Judy,
Jerry Smith,
Cheryl McQuaid,
Marilyn Coulter. Mr. Cook, could you please say and spell your name for me, please?
My name is Eldridge Cook, E-L-D-R-I-D-G-E, C-O-O-K.
And could you give us your address, please?
My address is 3725 Alpine Drive, Lansing, Michigan, 948911.
Are you married?
No.
Do you have any children?
Yes.
Where were you born?
I was born in Hulcom, Mississippi.
Hulcom, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And your education?
I have a bachelor degree in business education. Taught school 2 years in Mississippi before I came to General Motors. I taught 9th grade English, 10th grade, 11th grade, and 12th grade bookkeeping, typing, and shorthand for 2 years before I came to General Motors.
Were you ever in the military?
No, never went to the military. I was kept out of the military to teach school in Mississippi.
Okay, so you were a teacher, and first of all, what brought you to Lansing, Michigan?
More money.
More money? Yeah.
I was coming to Michigan during the summer, working at General Motors and going back teaching school in Mississippi. So after 2 years of doing that, I was making more money during the summer at General Motors than I was teaching, so I decided to come to General Motors full time.
So now, how did that happen? How did you happen to come up to Michigan for, how'd you find out about that?
Well, I had a brother, you know, going to school at Michigan State, and he was working at Oldsmobile part-time and going to school at State.
Okay. So, when did you first start working?
I first started working at GM in May of 1963. Yeah, from May to September of 63, and went back and taught school from September to May of 63 and 64. Came back in 63 and 64, May again, and worked at GM from May to September.
So when you worked there, were you an assembler?
Yes, I was on the assembly line putting in body wires.
So what did you think when you first came in there?
Well, it was something different. Started off at $2.35 an hour, and that was very strange. I used to work all day for less than $3 from sun to sun. So it was quite different. Yeah.
So what was your actual seniority date when you first...
My actual seniority date when I came back was May 17, 1965. The first two times I was 2 days short of 90 days, and in 63 I was 2 days short, and 64 I was 1 day short, and I didn't have no idea about the 90-day established seniority rule, so I cut myself 2 years short from GM.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So now, when you were coming in the summers to work, mm-hmm. and then leaving, how did the employees treat you, knowing you were coming in for a short moment and leave?
Yeah, at that time, Jerry Brook was the personnel director down in personnel, and he was looking for somebody, he said, that really wanted to work, and I explained to him my situation, that I was teaching school, and that I'd be going back in September to teach school, and he kind of went along with that for 2 years, and the third time I told him I was going to stay, he said, well, good, we'll be glad to have you. And I stayed.
So, actually, at that time, they used to have a lot of teachers who would come and work, mm-hmm. inside the plant,
right.
during the summertime, during downtime.
Right, yes.
So, 1965,
mm-hmm.
you came in and you stayed.
Yes, I did.
Earl?
Earl Nicholson. At that time, with you coming up to the factory up in Michigan, could you tell me what your opinion is of what the percentage of African Americans and Hispanic Americans and Asian Americans were working in the factory at that time?
Yes, it was very few. I think we had one African American supervisor at that time. I think it was Cleve Stepter. He was, I think, the first black African American on supervision at that time I came here. Yeah.
Any Mexicans?
None.
Any Asians?
None.
And, at that time. And how many African Americans were working on the floor?
Quite a few.
Quite a few?
Yeah, but the ratio was maybe 41, you know, but it wasn't that many, but it was some.
Maryland culture.
Mm-hmm.
Earl brings up a good question. In terms of climate in the 60s, mm-hmm. inside the plant versus in school, what was it like as far as culture, in terms of being the way you were treated?
It was different, very different, but like I said, from being from the South, I had adapted to all type of different situation from the way I was brought up down South. It was very different.
Okay. So, you hired in. You're on the line. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what department you first hired in?
Yeah, I was in the paint department down in Wet Sand. Yeah.
And what was Wet Sand?
They were sanding the bodies and running water on it to keep it cool, I guess. But that's what they was mm-hmm. doing. You had to wear rubber boots and stuff like that to keep your feet dry.
So, when you were working in there after being... How did working in the paint department versus working in the trim department where you were running wires?
No comparison. Trim department was a piece of cake as far as job situation and everything else. I was more adapted to that type of work than working in water and wet sand.
How long did you work in paint?
Well, I only worked the one summer that I was here, which was about 9 or 10 weeks I worked, and then I went back. When I came back the second time, I was in the trim department laying body wires, and that was much better work, much better working condition also.
So in working conditions, how were the people? Were there any pranks that were pulled? What type of things did you do?
Yeah, it was jokes pulled on you, but like I said, coming from the South, I was used to all that type of situation, so really it didn't bother me.
So mm-hmm. are you saying that you were more or less, they were more or less racial type jokes?
It was a lot of them, but like I say, I knew where I came from and I knew what my situation was, mm-hmm. so I just heard it and didn't hear it and kept going. My main objective was to stay at Joe Motors and on a good living. So that was my main purpose for being there, so the jokes didn't really bother me.
So did you find that to be so in the trim department also?
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, Cheryl McQuaid?
Cookie, were the jokes something that happened, the racial jokes, were they something to lighten up the air between co-workers, or were they hurtful and mean-spirited?
Well, I think they were meant to be hurtful, but like I say, with my background, my Christianity background, I just overlooked it. But like I said earlier, my main focus was being there to work and on a living, you know, and that's what I really concentrated on. That's what I focused in.
So, 1965.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like in the trim shop in 1965? Can you describe what the plant was like for us back then?
Yes, it was 10 hours a night, and that was good in a sense. You know, it kept me busy. I'd work all night, sleep all day, get up and come back to work the next day. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so you were doing that for $2.35 an hour?
Yep. I started out at $2.35 an hour.
And how long did you do wires?
For 3 years I'd laid body wires, and then I got to be a relief man. And from there, I went on timekeeping. In 1969, I was timekeeper for maybe 6 months, and after that, we promised me a raise, and I didn't get that, so I told them I was going back on the line, which I did.
So, can you mm-hmm. tell me, number one, what's a relief person? And then number two, what was a timekeeper and how did you get that?
The relief person, they needed extra people And like I say, I had been there for a while, and other people was going on relief, and I asked my supervisor, why can't I have a relief job? You know, I have some seniority, a little bit, but not much, but I had as much seniority as some of the people they were putting on relief. So he said, I'll give you a try. So he did.
And a relief person did what?
We had 7 or 8 people. We had to go around, give them breaks every 10 or 12 minutes, 3 times a day.
Yeah. And
Cheryl McQuaid, mm-hmm. could you walk us through Body Wires? What is Body Wires, and what did you do to perform that job?
Well, Body Wires, you had an option sheet on the front of the automobile that it was coming down the line. It had option on it, what type of electrical equipment went inside the car. So you had to match that up with the right body wire so it would form those, those functions.
So did you plug the body wires into something?
No, you just laid it on the floor and clipped it in and routed it through the door openings and all the way back to the back seat opening. If you had power for the rear door, you had to route the wires through the hole in the center post and through the door opening. So when you put your door glass regulators in, be plugged in.
Jerry Smith, not to get ahead of you on this, because a lot of them won't know that you were a supervisor in that same area.
Mm-hmm.
Did that help you understand how the workers felt about the job and how they handled the job?
Yes.
Because you had done it before?
Yes, it did. And it made my job much easier. I went on supervision in 1971, and it really made my job easier because I had been there and done what the employees on the line was doing, and I knew how difficult some of the jobs were.
Can you tell me, once again, what is a timekeeper?
The timekeeper was, I had the body shop at that time. But anyway, a timekeeper was, you had to go out and collect the time card. At that time, people had to punch in and punch out. So you had to go at the end of the day and collect the time cards, take them back to the office and add up their time and record it so they would get a proper check at the end of the week.
And was that a job of an hourly person?
No, that was salary. That was strictly a salary employee job.
So, no, was that an increase in pay for you?
It's supposed to have been, but after 3 months, it wasn't. So I told them I was going back to the line, which I did.
So, And did you have a question, Earl?
Before we started, I was hoping to get to this before we got to the supervision questions.
Oh, okay.
But were you ever on strike?
Yes. Yeah, I was in that 1970 strike, and I was devastated. I just had got married in 66 and had the 2 kids, and I was getting ready to go down and sign up for the welfare and everything else. And after we ended that strike in 1970, yeah, I went off supervision in 1971.
Do you remember what that strike was about?
I think it was about 30 and out. That's what I think it was about. Yep.
During your time as an hourly employee, were you active or did you participate in your union activities?
Yes, I went to the meetings every time. We had a union meeting. I was over here at the union hall. Mm-hmm. But as far as being a membership, active member of the within the union, no, I was never an official member.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. No, when you say that you were never an official member. I mean, you were UAW.
Yes.
You just weren't active in,
right,
as a union, like a committee man or nothing.
Right, no, that's what I really meant.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you went out, you did strike, you did
mm-hmm.
timekeeper, you
mm-hmm.
came back.
Yeah.
Then in 1971,
mm-hmm.
you became a supervisor.
Yeah.
Now, how were you, was that something that you applied for? Were you quartered to do that?
A year after I had gone on supervision, before I went on supervision, I applied for supervision, and I was told that I couldn't pass the test, and that was really amazing to me after being a school teacher for 2 years and had a bachelor's degree in business education, and they told me I couldn't pass the test, so I just kind of swept that under the rug.
Okay, hold on.
So
go ahead.
Yep, and I took the test, and they told me I didn't pass, so I just kind of swept, to me, I just swept that under the rug, and that's just another strike against me. So I was satisfied just going back on the line. So in 1871, they passed this law that they had to have so many more minorities on supervision, and I guess they went back and checked my record and found out my background in business education and the degree that I had. And Dick Spark was the superintendent at the time, and he had me to come in and said I was going on supervision. I told him I didn't want it. He said, yep, we're going to put you on. I said, I don't want to go on supervision. I just took the test a while back, and no one said I passed, so why are you saying I'm going on? He said, well, Cookie, I'm going to tell you, you're going on whether you want it or not. You'll be on supervision. This was on Tuesday afternoon, and he said, on Monday, you'll be on supervision, whether you want it or not. I said, well, I'm telling you now, I don't want it. He said, we could care less what you want. You will be on supervision Monday. So that's how I got on.
So, and you were how old when you came into the plant?
71. When I came into the plant, I was 25.
And so, yep. 71, you were?
31.
Mm-hmm. So, you went on supervision under duress.
Yeah, I did.
You were strong, held in. Yeah. Do you mm-hmm. remember the first area that you were supervisor?
Yeah, the first area I had was up in 3X, putting in seats. Yep.
So, and you were in there in the seat department. My first question, how did your employees react to having you as a supervisor?
Well, some reacted real good and some could care less who I was, and I had some refused to take their paycheck from me because I guess my race, they wouldn't take their paychecks from me. I had to mail them, so that didn't bother me either.
So, was there any type of training that you received prior to becoming the supervisor, or did they just throw you out of the ropes?
Yep, from Tuesday I was told I'd be on Monday, and Monday I went on with no training, no nothing. Here it is, it's yours. So,
how did that work for you?
Well, I guess being a Christian like I am, I put God first, and that's who was my trainer.
So what was required of supervisors in 1971?
Well, our main objective was to keep the line. That was number one, keep the line running. Number two, would build a good A1 product. But number one, keep that line running. And that's what our goal was.
So when you were an hourly worker, what made a good supervisor for you?
A good supervisor to me was taking care of his employees, catering to their needs, not no one else's need but theirs, you know. So,
and being the factor that you had been on the line, did you feel that that made you a better supervisor?
No, I know it did, because like I said earlier, you know, I had been there, done that, so I knew I could understand what they was going through, and I could kind of deal with it better than not knowing what they go through.
So, being a supervisor, did you work day shift? Did you work night shift? How did that go?
Well, when I went on, we was doing 12 weeks night, 12 weeks days. So I was from day shift to night shift, day shift to night shift, every 12 weeks.
How did that work for you and your family?
It worked good for me because when I worked in days, I could stay home. I mean, when I was working, yeah, days, I'd be at home with my little kids at night. And so when I went to night, we had to get a babysitter to be at home with the kids.
So you said because the laws had changed, mm-hmm. they had to put more
blacks
on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How many supervisors do you remember? Do you remember who all got put on?
Yes, I went on. Robert Vaughn went on. Walt Benningfield was put on. Sandy Coleman was put on. Lynn Hill was put on, and I don't know how many up in the paint shop.
And now, what about women?
Yeah, we had some women. We had Sandy Coleman and Lynn Hill was women. Yeah. So the only two black women I think we ever had in Trim.
No.
Saint Nicole.
No, they came in later years,
well,
right?
Later. Yeah, they came in the late 80s or the mid 80s. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, as a supervisor and as a line worker, can you tell me some? Now, you're retired now?
Yes, yes. And he's definitely retired.
How many years did you retire in with?
37 and a half.
37 and a half. Mm-hmm. So in 37 and a half years, can you walk us through what life was like for a supervisor in there? What are some of the big changes that you had in there?
Life
that
was,
you noticed?
Yeah, in 37 years there and 31 as a supervisor, life had really changed. It went from a little authority to much more authorities in the later years. But it was still tuck and go. You know, still you knew you had so much you could do and so much you didn't dare do. You know, your main objective was just to get a good quality out and keep the line running.
Can you share what you wouldn't dare do?
Yeah, number one, you didn't dare talk back to your supervisor. That was number one. Whether you were right or wrong, you didn't dare to cross him.
Nope.
Earl Nicholson, what point in your career, I mean, you told me that the white employees wouldn't accept checks from you.
Right.
You had to mail them. At what point did that change?
Well,
what year?
That was back in the late 80s, I believe. No, late 70s. They refused to take a check from me, and it didn't bother me. I just took it back down the payroll.
Well, yeah, but when did they start accepting it? When did that come to an end?
In the early 80s, they was okay with it, I guess. But you know, you still could tell that they didn't want to be bothered with you, but you had to go on because I had a job to do. Regardless of their feeling, I knew I had a job to do, and I did it to the best of my ability. I also knew I had a family, a wife, and three kids to support. So I knew where my meal ticket was, so I had to do the best of my ability to make sure I didn't lose my job.
Cookie, Marilyn Coulter, mm-hmm. What were some of the things that you were able to help change in the plan?
Well, one thing is being a black supervisor, I could relate to a lot of people's problems, and I tried to help them in any way I could, you know. You have to be sensitive to their needs because life was more than just fish about it. You have a personal life also. So you have to be sensitive and cater to some of their needs, and I know people that work for me on the night shift that had families and kids and activities, and they couldn't go to see some of their kids' activities, and I used to get around that by, hey, go see your daughter basketball game or your son basketball game, come right in after the game is over. Don't go to McDonald's, don't go to Burger King. When the game is over, get yourself in here to work. And that worked for me. And the employee that I did that for, they respected that, and they, when the game was over, they hustled right into work. And I appreciated that, too.
Yeah. I'd like to talk a little bit about health and safety.
Mm-hmm.
When you first hired in, how safe was Fisher Body? And in 1970, how safe was Fisher Body? And in 1980, how safe was Fisher Body?
Well, from the safety standpoint of view, back in the 70s, I know we had to wear steel-toed shoes. And we got away from that in the later part of the 80s. You didn't have to, steel-toed shoe wasn't the requirement. You also had to wear safety glasses. But we still had to wear safety glasses, but the number one issue, the steel-toed shoes had gone out. But other than that, everything was still safe.
How many people had been hurt, say, like in 1970 as opposed to 1980?
I can't give you that number. because I really don't know.
Did you ever work on anybody that had been seriously hurt?
No. No.
Cookie. Mm-hmm. You were there in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You were there in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Marilyn Coulter.
Mm-hmm.
You were there in the 70s. You were there in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You were there in the 90s.
Yep.
Can you tell me how the plant population changed in terms of your employees?
Yes. In the 80s, we start getting more younger people in. And they had their own mindset, you know. Number one, I shouldn't say all of them, but most of them were lazy, just looking for a handout and didn't want to really work to earn what was being offered to them. Back in the 60s and the 70s, people really appreciated their job and they gave you 100%. And that's the only difference that I could see between the generation gap. The 60s and the 70s, people really appreciated their job and wanted to work. Well, those in the 80s and the 90s was not as ambitious as the world back in the 60s and 70s.
What would you attribute that to?
Staying at home with the mom and dad, and the mom and dad giving them everything, and not being out on their own, earning their own way. That's what I contributed to.
Cheryl McQuinn, did you, as a supervisor, were you able to weed out some of these lazy people, or was that something that you had no control over?
No control over it whatsoever. You know, that was did through the unemployment office.
So, do you feel that when General Motors, Fisher Body Lansing, gave the hiring practices over to the employment office versus the in-house
referral
where they went and they actually came and stood in the plant and our employment office hired them in?
Well, I think the referral system was much better because if I had an employee and he had a sister or a brother that wanted to get in, and the employee that came to me was a good worker, so yes, I recommend that they would hire a sister or brother, which I had about 6 people that I recommended down in the employment office. They hired them just because their sister or their brother was employee of mine, and they was good working, and they hired their brother or sister, and they turned out to be good workers. I think that's when we really lost control of the plant, when we stopped doing that, you know.
So do you think some of that was because they didn't have it grandfathered down to them, like the importance of the UAW, the importance of General Motors, and what it had to offer?
Well, the UAW was still important to him, but like I said, if you're working with the employee for 4 years, and if he or she was a good employee, if they had a sister or brother that wanted to come work for GM based on that work relationship, you would, you know, say, hey, give him a shot. His sister, his brother was a very good employee, and I think that's where we lost a lot of good employees when they went away from that.
Earl Nicholson, you ever fire anybody?
No, they fired themselves.
could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I think during my time, I let 2 people go, and it was for violation that they had been warned and warned and warned on, and they never corrected it, and so we had to let them go.
So you felt that they deserved that then?
Well, I shouldn't say they deserve it because every man or woman needed a good job, but they just wouldn't step up to their responsibility to what they needed to correct, and they did not. So therefore, we had to let them go.
Cookie, Marilyn Coulter, what would you say, just from being on the master side, what were some of the things that people primarily got fired for? And
Well, usually it was drinking. That was number one. Drinking or drugs. But number one was the main reason that you had to let somebody go because they couldn't do the job.
But now, just so people understand who don't work with us, it's not easy to just totally dismiss somebody. There's a lot of steps that you had to go through. Could you tell us a little bit about the steps that you had to go through as a supervisor before you did dismiss or discipline someone?
Well, you had to go through the proper procedure. You had to go through labor relations, have an interview, and they determine what the penalty were, and you put them on probation and give them a chance. They come back. They on probation for X amount of time. If they didn't break their probation during that period, they were safe again for, you know, and then some of them would just go back and break their probation. Mm-hmm. So it just wasn't no hope.
Now, some things that, depending on what it was, sometimes you got what was called a verbal warning.
Yes.
And then a written reprimand.
Right.
And then they got 3 days off.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was a week and then
2 weeks.
And then
4 weeks.
4 weeks and then
discharged.
So they had a lot of opportunities that the UAWGM gave them before they actually did see the street. And then what did you think about, I know that you said some people had substance problems. I know we also had an EAP program, an Employee Assistance Program. How did you feel about that program as a supervisor?
I thought it was a wonderful program, and I felt like most people should have took advantage of it that didn't. It was right there for them to use, and they didn't.
Earl Nicholson, what do you think about the team concept?
I loved it. To me, it was just too late coming.
Can you please explain the team concept?
Yeah, you had an employee that was you picked out. Well, I shouldn't say you picked out, but that was chosen to have 6 or 7 employees, and he had to cater to all their needs. And it took a lot of stress off the supervisor because he couldn't cater to 35 or 40 employees. But if you had a team leader, he knew his responsibility was this group. Not only that group, but if he saw another group in trouble, he had the capability of going up assisting another group.
And how large were those groups?
The old group was, I had something like 30 people, and I had 4, I think, TC leaders, a team leader that took care of 7 or 8 people in his own group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, once again, you were there for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And in your 37 years, there were many programs that were developed that involved employees. Can you tell us about some of those programs? One of them was quality work life and employee participation groups. How did you feel about those things as a supervisor?
I thought they was wonderful. Anytime you can give people more knowledge, you help them understand their job better, I think it's a wonderful thing. We were just too late doing it, you know, I think.
Do you feel that there were some supervisors who fought those programs?
I can't answer that because I know I loved them and I participated in all of them. Yep.
Sure.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, Fisher Body had a salary parking lot and a salary dining area.
Right.
Did you go to these places? What did you do for lunch?
I went to, at the time, they had salary parking. I parked in the salary parking lot. In the salary dining room, I ate in the salary dining room, but to me, it was a thing saying that I'm better than you, I park here and I eat there, why can't we all eat in the same place and park in the same place? That was my thing, you know, I never felt like I should be in a certain place, you be in a certain place. We both working at the same place, and we both working to accomplish the same goal. Give General Motors a good quality job and your paycheck. That was it.
So it didn't bother you at all when they took those things away?
Nope.
Did you hear much from other supervisors that didn't care for it?
Some mumble and grumble, but like I said, it didn't concern me. My main objective, like I said, was supporting that wife and family. Yeah. And they had a good job, so I did everything I could to keep it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cookie, Marilyn Coulter, I know you said that some of the employees had a problem with you and didn't want to accept the checks and things like you. Mm-hmm. How did your fellow supervisors take you and treat you?
Well, at that time, it wasn't that many black supervisors, you know. And really, that didn't bother me in a sense, yes. But as a whole, it didn't bother me.
But how was your relationship with the other supervisors, the white supervisors?
It was good. It was good. I always could get along with anybody, you know. You put God first, employee second, and after me, I was always last. And that's carried me all the way through life. Yeah.
Earl Nicholson, mm-hmm. How was your relationship with upper management?
It was good. Yeah, they kind of loved Cookie. Everybody kind of looked out for Cookie, and everybody loved Cookie. And so I respected them because who they were, I respect them as their position, who they were. As long as you do that, you have no problem with nobody. All they deserve is respect, and you give them that respect, so you don't have no problem with
it. You going to tell me who your favorite plant manager is?
Oh, Lord. Well, my favorite plant manager.
No, wait. Before we go to that, you were working at Fish and Body when Amy Farmer came there.
Yes.
And that was the first female plant manager.
Mm-hmm.
Did that have any effect on you at all?
None whatsoever. I treated her just as a plant manager and not as a gender. To me, she was a plant manager, and I know you have to, regardless who it is, you got to respect the position first, male or female, respect the position, and everything followed.
And did she live up to that reputation of plant manager?
To me, she did. I had no problem with her. None whatsoever.
Okay, now we go back to my other question. Who was your favorite plant manager?
Jim Zucker.
Jim Zucker.
Jim Zucker.
He's also Mike, too.
Jim Zucker, to me, was a people person, and he cared about his employees. To me, he cared about his employees.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheryl McQuaid, did you ever have any super management or hourly people that played a big, significant role in your life to help you through your day? I mean, some of those days when the employee is not going to take a check from you, that had to have been hard. It doesn't matter who it is. I mean, that had to have been hard.
Yep.
Was there anybody that just, you know, hey, keep your chin up, cookies? Yeah. Anybody that?
Well, my supervisor at that time was Floyd Jackson. I don't know whether you all remember Floyd Jackson or not, but he always would come tell me, he's a cookie, keep your chin up. And he treated me just like his own. And I respected Floyd for that to the day he died, and always will, because he always would come and see how I was doing. Joy Connell was another supervisor that always wanted to know how Cookie was doing. You know, so, I mean, that go a long way. Yeah.
Cookie.
Yep.
Gary Judy.
Yeah.
Cookie, now you were a supervisor in several areas.
Mm-hmm.
Trim, body shop.
I've never been in body shop. Just
wasn't you out in the body shop?
I'm a timekeeper out there.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So just the trim area, that was the only place you were a supervisor?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. I was thinking you were in the body shop, and I was going to ask you which area you felt was the easiest
to manage,
but yeah. I guess that doesn't apply.
Yeah.
But actually, it does apply, because trim has a lot of different areas in it. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us which one of those departments was your favorite area to supervise?
Well, I had two. The year we started doing vinyl tops, I really enjoyed the vinyl top, putting on vinyl tops, and door panel area.
No.
Those were my two favorite areas.
And what made it so? What made them your favorite area?
I had good employees. I loved the employees, and they were very pleasant to work with. And hey, they were just two employees. So it made my job look easier.
So what are some of the things that made your... what made a bad area for you?
What made a bad area? Mm-hmm. Well, the night shift It was one time in the bad area because the younger, like I said, after 84, you start getting all the younger employees, and they didn't really want to work. They just wanted to come in and get a paycheck, and they didn't live up to their responsibility as the older people did, my age group and what have you. So it was more difficult with the younger generation than it was with the older generation.
Can you tell me what types of things you did as a supervisor to help pull the area together? Were there dinners? Were there, you know, special occasions? What types of things did you guys do for that?
Well, my main thing was the better you treat somebody, the easier your job gonna be. And I made it my point of business every day to go up to each employee and chat with them to see how you're doing, how your day going, or anything I can help you with. And let them know that if they did have a problem or something that they wanted to talk about, I was there to listen to them, not saying I could solve all their problems. But at least I went around every day to let them know that I was there if they needed some help.
Earl Nicholson, you know, for you, do you know the phrase going postal?
No.
Where the post office employee comes in with a gun and goes crazy and starts shooting people.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever known of anybody to ever come bring a weapon into work?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And what was the end result of that?
Well, eventually he confessed to me that he didn't like me, and he brought a gun in one Saturday to kill me, and he said when he got up to me, he couldn't pull the gun out of his hand. Something just held his hand. Mm. And so after he told me that, I went to the superintendent and told him, and he said, do you want to have him fired? I said, nope, I don't want to have him fired. Because evidently somebody was looking out for me that he couldn't carry out the act that he wanted to. And so he didn't discharge him. And after that, he was always coming up and said, Cookie, I thank you for saving my job. I said, well, hey, you know, I didn't save your job. The good Lord saved your job because the good Lord kept you from doing the act on me. So therefore, I just reversed it back on you.
So do you believe that might have been racially motivated?
I don't know. I can't say for sure whether that was
racially. He just didn't like you?
Right. He just didn't like me.
And after all that, was he a changed man?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Cookie, was that in the early part, mid, or the latter part of your supervising?
That was in the early 90s. That was right before I retired. Yeah, it was in the 90s. But he did. So he brought a gun in to kill me one Saturday night. He just couldn't pull it out of his pocket.
Wow.
Major.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So are you aware of any other events where people had brought weapons in?
No, that was the only one that I know about that the guy came up and told me about it. So, yeah, I was thankful that the good Lord kept his hand around me.
Yep. Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other relatives that work inside the facility?
Yes, I have one daughter worked at General Motors.
And I take it this is one of the persons you referred to get the job?
Oh, yes, I referred my daughter at the time, yeah.
Can you tell me what was one of your, two things. Number one, what was one of your best times or best memories in the plant? And what was one of your worst? I'm assuming that one might have been one of your worst.
Well, let's see. I had a lot of good times, and like I said, the only bad time was when I just told you about. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of super good times in the plant, so the good outnumbered the bad. So,
can you tell me what did they do for holidays
in the plant?
Mm-hmm.
We always had dinners. We ate out there. We fed them and worked them hard, and we got out of good quality.
So, as a supervisor, what did you do? Did you do it personally? Did you cook? What did you do?
No, we just kind of had potlucks. Everybody would bring in a dish to pass. We ate good every day. Bring donuts in, and I make coffee in my office every day. And people come by, want a cup of coffee, you get a cup of coffee and donut or whatever.
Now, that's something that changed over the years because with plant policy, yes. Mm-hmm. And there used to be a lot of cooking right on the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to cook. We used to cook in the oven, bring a roast in, put it in the paint ovens, and cook it.
and you could, in the paint ovens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, set them in the paint oven, and by the time lunchtime, 5 hours, that roast was done. Yeah.
So, was there anybody in the plant that you developed a friendship that extended outside of the plant?
Not really. Yeah.
I know that you say that, I hear you refer to your belief. Mm-hmm. A lot.
Yes.
Were there Bible study groups or anything like that that you participated in?
It was Bible study group in the plant, but I used to sit in my office and read mine, but I never did participate in the groups there in the plant. But that's the only thing that kept me going was my faith, my belief, and my upbringing. Okay. Those are things that I never will get away from.
Now, they always call Lansing Fisher Body, mm-hmm. the capital of quality.
Yes.
Even during the turbulent times of the late 80s and the 90s when the culture started to change. What do you attribute that to?
Like I said earlier, to the old employees that appreciated their jobs and knew they had a good job, and they did the best of their ability to make sure we gave the best quality.
But the quality awards, even though some of the younger ones, not all, but some of them, may not have appreciated the job to the fullest, mm-hmm. we always, even though it was an older facility, that built a job in two different facilities, still noted to be the capital of quality. So the workforce as a whole still
believe in that good quality. Then I think Lansing will always be known as General Motors number one quality, because hey, we have the people that really build some good quality here in Lansing, and I was proud to be a part of it.
What did you think, or did it affect you? We went from Fisher Body to BOC to Lansing Car Assembly. What did you think about all the name changes? How did that affect you at all?
Well, it didn't, because like I said, our main objective was to build at number one quality. That was our paycheck. That was our livelihood. And that's what we had to focus on. But the name change didn't affect us at all. Sure, you hate to lose Fisher Body, Body by Fisher. We hate to lose that symbol, said Body by Fisher, but the quality stayed the same. We didn't slip in the quality.
When you came to Lansing, Fisher Body, and you said we had that, did you live in close proximity to the plant at all?
Yeah, I lived over on Magnolia Street, over on the east side, about 8 miles away. Didn't know my way around. Had to walk home every night because I didn't have no ride. But didn't know how to catch the bus. At that time of night, wasn't no bus running anyway. But after 10 hours, I came through that front door and headed down Valinda, Michigan, down to Kalamazoo and all the way across town to the east side, right before you get to 496 bypass. Did that every night until, hey, I sure did. Catch the bus to work in the daytime and walk home every night. Don't know the nugget.
What did the community that you lived in think of Fisher Body?
They thought Fisher Body the best thing that ever happened to Lansing. And they still do. Everybody grump and moan about Fisher Body closing, you know. And we're going to be devastated, but we still going to go out and Delta Plant and build the same good quality we did here in Lansing. I believe that.
Earl Nicholson, mm-hmm. When did you buy your first car?
I bought my first car in 1976. Yeah, and I hired in 65.
What was the first car that you bought?
1976 Cutlass Oldsmobile.
And that was a product that you were making? A
product that we were making.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure was.
So you know that the motor coach symbol,
yes,
is a symbol that you've been mm-hmm. raised with all your life, and it's a tradition.
Yeah.
Would you like to see that symbol come back?
I would. I'd like to see that symbol, Body by Fish. I hated to see that lead. Yeah, I hated to see that symbol lead, Body by Fishing.
I have to ask you, Bill and Holden.
Mm-hmm.
You walked to work for all those years?
Mm-hmm. From work. I caught the bus in the daytime, but at night, yeah.
And so for 5 years you didn't ride that?
Mm-mm.
And you walk?
Well, yeah. Every night.
I don't comment. I think that's why he expected so much from his employees.
Yeah. Cheryl McQuaid.
Mm-hmm.
Cookie, there were a lot of things that supervisors allowed employees to get away with.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't always what salary wanted the employees to do. And what I'm thinking about is check pools, mm-hmm. Playing cards, gambling, yeah. Football pools.
Mm-hmm.
How did you see any of that going on? And how did you, were you the type that just turned your head and walked away?
Yeah, you saw it every football season. You saw the football pool going. You saw the check pool every payday. And sometimes you just have to look the other way. You know what I mean? You see and you don't see. You hear and you don't hear. And you just look the other way and hope things go smooth. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Earl Nicholson, Cookie, you retired. And you stayed in Lansing, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
No desire to return to
Mississippi?
Not yet. No. No, my kids is here. My dad died last year in January. My mom passed in 1988, so I don't have any ties in Mississippi now. Just my cousins and stuff. But my kids is here, and I like it here. I'm used to the weather. That was the biggest thing I had to get used to. The weather, the way I came from, a cold day was 55 degrees.
That's another good question. Mm-hmm. When was the first time you'd ever seen snow?
When I came here, I came up here in 1958 to visit my brother, and they got maybe a foot of snow, and I didn't know, man, what is that stuff out there? What is it? And he said, that's snow. What is snow, you know? But I've seen plenty of those since I've been here.
So, Cookie, in being a supervisor, there had to been, what are some of the other programs that you felt was good for the employees? And how did it help to better the management-employee relations?
Oh, we had a lot of good programs to help better management, supervisor and employee relationship. But it was so many. It's been so long, Maryland, I can't name them all. But we had several good programs that I thought were very useful and very helpful.
So, when you're working here in the plant, KJ.
Cook, did you see anything that management could have did differently or better, or any programs that they should have stuck with? That would have made things even better as far as quality and the improvement of the process?
Well, I think some of the programs that we started, initiated, I mean, run them for 2 or 3 weeks or more, and then you don't hear no more about
the flavor of the month programs that they would call them.
Right, yeah.
Was there any that you felt that they should have stuck with that they didn't?
I can't recall particularly right now, but like I said, and once another program, we got the employee participating in the help setting up the jobs, help setting up the operation, that helped a whole lot because they had input, you know, in help setting it up, because as a team leader, when we implemented that program, the team leader had a lot to say about what goes where and will this work or will that not work, and that helped us a whole lot down in IE when we were setting up the new jobs. And that was a good program, I thought.
Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Working in the plant, one of the things that used to help get a lot of employees through the night was their radios.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us how you felt about radios?
They was fine, long as they wasn't too loud. Because I learned in my early stage of being on supervision, a happy employee is a good employee. If he want to play his radio, like I said, keep it down to a minimum. As long as he happy, I'm happy. You know.
And at times we had things that were called the radio wars. How did you deal with those?
Well, you go tell the employee to turn it down. You have to go 3 times and tell them to turn it down. The next time you confiscate it, have them turn it off. Which...
Being a seasoned supervisor,
mm-hmm.
and it's not really inside Fisher Body, mm-hmm. but being a seasoned supervisor, one of the things that they're going to say that we can't do is have no radios. How do you think that's going to affect the employees?
It's going to affect them bad, his attitude, his work ethics. Like I keep saying, and I learned this early on, a happy employee is a good employee. You keep them happy, you can get anything out of the world from them, and they do you a good job if they're happy. But if they're mouthing off and not happy, they could care less about you and the operation. So, therefore, give them some of their little needs and wants.
Okay, talking about needs and wants, one of the things that changed the needs and wants, it wasn't mm-hmm. just something that Fisher Body did, it was something the City of Lansing did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a ban on smoking. How did it affect your employees?
Before I retired, they had not put that in force.
Oh.
Mm-mm. But me with my condition, you know, I mean, my heart condition, it's a good thing for me. Mm-hmm. But as far as I can't say what it does mm-hmm. to someone else, because I never smoked to it. So mm-hmm. I can't say how it will affect you and you had to stop smoking.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Nicholson, sick leave and workers' comp. How do you feel? How did you feel about sick leave and how did you feel about workers' comp? How did you feel about protected employees?
Sick leave, I knew it was negotiated in the contract, so you have to live with it. You have to grin and bear. And I leave it at that. Yep.
What about injured workers? Mm-hmm. Those of us who have been injured.
Yeah, well, again, it was negotiated in the contract, and you couldn't go against the contract. So, again, you had the grin and bear. Yeah.
And I say that because some of the things were engineering problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you try to help your employees when they had those engineering problems? What types of things did you have to do try to make it better for your employees, to keep that happy employee?
Yeah, one thing I tried to do, go to management and let them know you can't do it that way, or you got to have an assist tool to help them instead of keep pounding and pounding the employee to keep doing it. You see it injuring them, so therefore you need a tool to assist them to do it.
Now, one of the things, when many of the programs that they had initiated was PDTs, which were product team representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Representatives. with the development and having an hourly employee get active in the actual engineering of a car. How did you feel that affected?
I think it was a good program because, like I said, you get your hourly employees involved in the product. They the one that got to put the parts together. They the one got to do the assembly and get them involved, see what all the difficulty it is doing it, and we go from there.
I think the abbreviation is VME. Because do you know what that is?
Mm-mm.
It's it was something that it was all the stats on the vehicle and the manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of supervisors live by that little chart. A lot of senior supervisors,
mm-hmm.
and I was wondering if you were aware of that, because I recall several senior supervisors mentioning that they would review these
mm-hmm.
before.
No. I don't remember ever reviewing any of those.
Okay.
Let me see. Cookie,
mm-hmm.
is there anything that you'd like to share with us that we have not touched on?
No, I think y'all touched on just about everything.
Okay. Yeah. Well, inside the plant. What are some of the things that you've done in the community?
Well, like I said, I'm active in my church, in the community, and right now I go up to the West Southside Community Center and sit and talk with some of the people, and next summer I told them I got some things that I was going to do for them next summer. As far as helping the West Southside Community Center develop a plot.
A plot for what?
Yep, that they want to do a garden. And last year now, they only had a little plot about from 4 feet by 6 feet, and they dug it up with a shovel. And I told them next year I would plow it up for them and make them a bigger plot with my tractor.
Now, what is it that you do for your church?
I'm assistant superintendent right now, and I go on trips. We take the kids on Sunday school trips to see the points. We've been to the mall outside of Milwaukee, the Water Mall. I can't remember the name of it right now, but we've taken them up there. We go to Cedar Point. We've been to the mall in Chicago, different places. We took them to Toronto one summer. So we do a lot of things with the Sunday school kids.
Now, being an ex-employee of yours,
mm-hmm.
I know that you do have a certain few sportsman-type hobbies that
mm-hmm.
some of us did get to partake in, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And you are an avid hunter
mm-hmm.
and fisherman.
Yes, ma'am.
And now, did you ever fish or hunt with any of your coworkers?
No. Never did. I take that bad. I hunt. I fish with one, Ed Duckett. He's my fishing buddy. We go fishing a lot. We go down to Lake Erie fishing. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy that. We go to the local lakes here fishing, and we really have a good time with old Ed.
And I know you often play cards with
yeah.
the co-workers.
Yeah, I play Biff Wiz. Can't find nobody to really challenge us. So my buddy and I think we're going to kind of hang that up. We can't get no takers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Just a parting shot. I know the interview, Earl Nicholson, I know the interview is coming to an end. Just one thing, one more question for me. And that would be how you feel about General Motors and the situation General Motors is going through right now. This is 2006,
mm-hmm.
and we know that General Motors is in a little bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Does that bother you?
Yes, it does, because it affects me. I still have a paycheck coming from General Motors too. But you got to look back in hindsight. General Motors been good to a lot of people for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And you ain't going to find another job anywhere in the United States that treat their employees like General Motors does. And so, you know, General Motors had been, I think, and I'm speaking to myself right now too, I think General Motors been too good to a lot of people for too long. And I really truly mean that. But we also deserve everything that we've gotten from General Motors also. General Motors is in trouble now, and we're going to have to bite the bullet and give up a little bit to keep some of the stuff that we have.
A cookie.
Mm-hmm.
What's their name? As we come to the end of the interview, I would like to say on record, being a past employee of yours, yes, you were a good supervisor. And I want to say thank you not only for being a good supervisor, but thank you for helping me through the times when my father passed away, because you were an excellent supervisor to have during that time. And thank you for taking time for this interview.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gordon.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Good seeing you.
Yes. Yeah.